Welcome to the Sliders and Curveballs podcast. My name is Mike, and I'm here with my son, Joseph.
Together, we are learning sports one game at a time.
It's another perfect ending for UConn. The 2014 national champions for an unprecedented ninth time. UConn sweeps the men's and women's finals for the second time. And once again, stores Connecticut as the center of the college basketball universe.
Welcome to our studio and the Sliders and Curveballs podcast, Mr. Kenton Facey. How are you, Kenton?
I'm good, and I'm really grateful for you guys having me here, so appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thanks so much. It's been a month since our shopping day at the mall, and I can't believe it's really about the 10-year anniversary of your 2014 championship, which is the school's second dual championship. Now, we're going to dive into those memories. Can you believe it's been a decade since you've been out of school?
Man, it's funny because maybe a week or two ago, I was at USJ and I ran into Dom Amore. He's one of the guys that works at the Hartford Current.
Yeah, he's been on our show.
Yeah. So he said the same thing. He asked me the same question. He's like, wow, it's been 10 years. And I'm there thinking about it like, it's really been 10 years. It felt like yesterday, going back and watching some film or video of that championship run. It feels so close in memory, but it's been 10 years. It's been a decade. That's incredible. But I'm happy the guys won again this year, so that kind of refreshed or reset everything else going forward.
Yep. When another title happens, it always brings back the memories of all the people that built that tradition.
Exactly.
And then the new guys come and do it all over again to keep that excellent lineage going.
Right. No, that's really cool. And I'm excited for these guys, happy and excited for them because, you know, that's something that will never change, being part of a championship team. You go back to campus and, you know, people, they show love for lack of a better term. And now for these guys to have themselves established in that group of guys as being champions, that'll never change. Wherever they go, they come back home, it's going to be all love for them.
I love it. Joseph, do you want to start off our first question?
Yeah. Hi, Kenton. Thanks for visiting us today.
Thanks, Joseph.
Take us back to growing up in Jamaica. My dad read you didn't start playing basketball until you were a teenager, and instead you loved soccer and cricket. How did you get involved with basketball?
Yeah, so growing up in Jamaica, especially where I grew up in the countryside. You know, in comparison here, you have like New York City versus I don't want to name communities where people think I'm calling them like a country or whatever. But I grew up in the countryside, mostly farming. Wasn't exposed to much sport outside of cricket, like you just said, and track and field and some soccer. So I was really good at track. I was competing at a high level doing track and field. But one summer I got really tall, and the basketball coach for my high school team asked me if I wanted to play. Someone on the team was changing for practice, and I think they dropped $50 in Jamaican currency. That's less than a dollar here. I found it and brought it to the coach, and he asked me if I wanted to play. And that's how I got introduced to the sport, by returning something that I found, and he invited me to practice the next day. So from there, I developed a love for it. I wasn't very good starting out. I started at 14 years old. Wasn't very good, but I stuck with it. And eventually, I attended a summer basketball camp put on by coaches from the United States and the Jamaica Basketball Association. And through that, I was able to earn a scholarship to high school in New York. So that's pretty much the short version of that story.
And how long did you play cricket for?
For as long as I can remember. Just growing up around a bunch of cousins and your friends in that community. That's how it was for me. I had a bunch of cousins. We'd play in the middle of the street. So we would get the wickets put them in the middle of the street and we play. And if there's a car coming, we would clear the street, let the car go by, and then we'd be right back in the street. So
is it kind of like stickball? Because I've actually taken Joseph to batting practice for Little League, mm-hmm. and there was a guy in there with, doing cricket at one point in time. But it's do you look at it like comparable to the United States baseball a little bit? Were you a good hitter?
It's very similar, but there's also a few differences. So instead of just having a catcher and a plate? I don't know much about baseball. So we have three sticks or wickets, we call them. You put those in the ground and that's behind the batsman. You have a catcher behind the wickets.
Okay.
So the objective is to bowl the ball from the opposite end, try to hit the wicket. Same as you would try to go for a strike.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's basically that. But you have two batsmen on either end. And once the hitter hits the ball, they exchange ends. And that's considered a run. So you do that back and forth until you win the game.
And how is the cricket team in Jamaica?
Pretty good. Okay. Really good. Cricket is probably one of the most dominant sports in Jamaica right now. It's cricket, track and field, football, soccer, and then basketball after all those three.
That's great.
Yep.
And how do you pronounce your hometown? Is it Trelawney?
Trelawney. So it's that would be like the equivalent of a state. So we have what we call parishes.
Okay.
So we have 14 parishes. I grew up in the parish of Trelawney, but my community, it's called New Road District.
Okay.
Yeah, so the parishes would be like the equivalent of the states here.
Now, I know that you have some major athletes over there, like yourself and Olympian Usain Bolt.
Yep.
Have you ever met him?
I have. Funny story. He grew up not too far from where some of my cousins lived. So we would go there for maybe Christmas or something. And my dad and his dad were playing dominoes and stuff in that community and a couple other friends. And he actually came by. So we got to meet him there. But I met him once before. We never really spoke. But it was a track and field meet at his high school, and I saw him, and it was a crowd of people standing around him because at that point he was about 17, 18, maybe just breaking out on the scene. So I met him real early, and then later on, a few years later.
Well, he took the Olympics by storm.
Right.
You must have been rooting for him crazy.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like, that's your countryman, and he's coming from a similar background as I am. So it's always good to have that representation and to give yourself some hope that at some point in your life you could achieve great things too.
That's great, and you did. Now, you played high school basketball in New York. You were a McDonald's All-Star nominee. Mm-hmm. What were some of your favorite memories and your toughest opponents of your time in the big city?
Oh, man. Just getting into New York was an incredible feeling for me, especially coming from where I come from, not much going on. But New York basketball has definitely taught me a lot, made me grow up a lot faster than I normally would have. But I probably would say the best thing for me that I took away from that is just being a part of a really good program. You were able to learn certain discipline that you would have to take with you for the higher level if you wanted to play at a higher level. So I played for a really good coach, and Coach John Buck. He's doing really amazing things with Long Island Lutheran right now. My first high school actually was Upper Room Christian School. Played for Coach Jackson there for a year. That kind of helped me transition from Jamaica to the States and playing a higher level of basketball. Even though it was high school, it's definitely a higher level than I was used to. So that transition year from Upper Room then over to Lehigh, which I would say would have been a step up for me. But Lehigh is a really great program, and it's a top 20, well, probably a top 10 program right now throughout the nation. It taught me a lot of great values that I think I brought with me to UConn and still hold on to today.
Well, that's great. And do you remember any particular matchups that were really tough that Lehigh faced?
Yeah, definitely.
School-wise or opponent-wise that you were eventually going to see in college?
Definitely. So off the top, a couple guys that I could think of right now is probably Isaiah Whitehead. He went to Seton Hall, but at the time we played against him, he was at Lincoln.
Okay.
And who else am I thinking about? Another guy named John Sevier went to Christ the King with Omar. I think he was a little bit younger than Omar, though.
Right.
So he went to Christ the King, I want to say. He was a really, really dynamic scorer. He went to play at Fordham. And I think he was Mr. Basketball. That same year I won Gatorade Player of the Year, I think he was Mr. Basketball for the state. But that was some really good matchups that I could think of Lincoln, Lehigh, or Christ the King and Lehigh upstate for the state federation championship.
Yeah, New York has always been fantastic for basketball. Mm-hmm. Have you ever played or visited the Rucker?
Yes. I want to say I've played there once or twice before. This was really early, though, so I was fresh off coming over. Not that good. And that environment will chew you up. If you're not ready, it will chew you up. And you have to be tough to play in those environments.
Yeah.
Played there. It was a fun experience for sure.
Joseph, why don't you fire off your next one?
What made you decide to join UConn? And how did your grades report card get your college career off to a slow start?
So that's a really good question. Let me start with the grades and all that stuff. So the issue I had earlier on, I'm assuming that's what we're talking about.
A little bit of a delay to the start of your season, right?
Because our school system in Jamaica is a bit different than what it is here. So high school for me in Jamaica started at seventh grade.
Oh, wow.
Right. So, yeah. So
Joe, you're almost in high school.
There you go. If he was in Jamaica, he would be in high school for sure. So I started high school in seventh grade as opposed to here, what, ninth grade, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so started in seventh grade, graduated in 11th grade. But when I moved here, I did a placement test and I was put back in the 10th grade. So because essentially I finished high school in Jamaica.
Right.
But by the standards here, I didn't just basically starting high school too early in Jamaica. That's what caused that delay, I guess.
Was it for a semester at UConn or
no? Everything worked out eventually, but it was just in limbo for maybe a month, and then we got it resolved.
And I remember seeing stuff on Twitter: free facey.
That
you
was
know,
funny.
We got to get him on the
that
court.
Was funny. To this day, I still have a really good relationship with the compliance officer. Her name is Angie Creeters. She's the one that was spearheading that with the NCAA, and she got it resolved, and I was able to play right away. So
that's great. And UConn's taken players from all over the world.
Right.
I mean, we've had players from Israel with Nadav Hanifeld and Daron Sheffer. So working out all the different school systems and mechanics, that's an important thing of a young man's tradition. It must have been a little stressful for you.
I was nervous. I was panicking. But as we go along, we learn, and I'm sure the NCAA has had similar incidents where they probably would have to look back at a case like that, for example, and say, okay, it might not be that big of a deal. It might just be differences in systems based on where you're from.
Of course. What made you know that UConn was the best spot for you?
So again, started out playing really young, didn't know much about the sport, moved here as a teenager. And funny enough, the first year I moved to the States, that's the year Kemba and those guys won.
Okay.
So I came over in 2010.
Okay.
And
they went in 2011.
Right. So that was it. Me and my brother and I, we were sitting down watching the tournament. And I have a host family.
Okay.
Took me in, basically. We were watching the game, and he's telling me UConn is really good. Not forcing me one way or another. He's just telling me what's going on because I have no idea. This is all new to me.
Right. And your host family is in what state?
In New York.
In New York.
Long
okay.
Island, the Brown family.
I love that host family.
Yeah.
They're UConn
they
fans.
They are amazing. Shout out to the Browns. Thank you guys. So, we're watching the game and he's explaining to me, like, he's like, oh yeah, that's Kemba. So now I'm starting to pay more attention and I'm learning, all right, what the college dynamic looks like.
Right. And Kemba's from New York.
Right, exactly.
And just an absolute legend in college basketball to win all those games.
Right. So my host family is originally from the Bronx. So my brother knew all about Kemba and everything like that. So he was like, yeah, that's Kemba. And he's telling me more and more about college basketball, you know? And then just by watching the NDA1, I'm like, wow, I'd love to play there. And literally that was it. That's why I started paying attention to UConn basketball, developing those dreams and aspirations to play there just based off the fact that they won that year and my brother really thought highly of the program and of the players.
That's fantastic. Now, speaking of grades, UConn was banned from the NCAA tournament in Coach Ali's first year. And then all of a sudden, boom, a title, right?
Right.
So I remember Shabazz saying, this is what happens when you ban us, his post-game celebration.
Right.
What's the vibe going into your freshman year? I actually hear that you took a tour of Cowboy Stadium early in the season, and then 5 months later, you're playing against Kentucky for the title game.
I'm not sure if I'm remembering that right, but I know we took a tour of the Cowboy Stadium, but I can't remember when exactly.
Was it in the early part of the season?
I'm not remembering.
Because I think Coach Ali is a Dallas fan, am I right?
Right. Yeah, we definitely did take a tour, but I'm getting confused whether it was closer to the tournament time.
Gotcha.
or was it earlier? But we definitely did take a tour. That was amazing. The thing that I remember most, though, was the screen above the stadium. They have this huge screen, and
right.
I'm like almost the size of the football field.
Right.
And I'm sitting there in amazement looking like, wow, this is crazy. But
You're going to be up on that
right.
screen.
that was amazing.
I think it's from 20-yard line to 20-yard line.
It is massive.
It's massive.
It's huge.
All right, Joseph, go ahead with another one.
Louisville was a nightmare for UConn that year.
Oh, yeah.
You lost by like 33 points.
For sure.
Why was that team so good against you, and how did you keep believing in yourselves?
Again, a really great question. Louisville was a tough matchup for us across the board, I think. They had really aggressive, experienced players at each position. They still have a bunch of guys from that team in the NBA right now, so that's a testament to that class of guys that they had. We were able to keep our head up after. I can remember vividly after that loss, Coach Ali was pretty upset. He let us hear it in the locker room, but we had a guy in Shabazz. He was calm, cool, collected throughout the whole ordeal. We lost the game. Okay, he said, all right, we lost the game. We lost really bad to a really good team, but we're going to win the championship. And everybody had so much respect and believed in his game so much that a sense of calm almost came over everyone in the locker room, because whatever he says, you have to believe it because he would always back it up. So mm-hmm. he was the rider that kind of just kept us on track. He really commanded that team as a captain. He really, as he went, that's how the team went. So he said, look, we're going to win this thing. And everybody kind of looked around like, he's not crazy, but wow, for him to say that, it speaks volume. And, you know, the rest is history.
So much confidence in himself.
You're right.
Yeah, Louisville, they were really tough.
Oh, yeah.
Pitino, who's now back in the Big East,
right.
coaching St. John's,
right.
The full court press, you really have to have your ball handling skills or
exactly.
they're going to pick your pocket
right.
all day long. And that was a drubbing. I think it might have been 90 to 87 or so to 48.
Yeah, that was a rough one for sure.
Yeah, and I'm like, listen, they have difficulty matching up against Louisville, but just don't put them in our bracket.
Right.
And
everything lined up for us, so hey, no complaints here.
Exactly. Now, in the first round game, I remember I was bowling at the time, and I'm watching constantly after I throw a ball. I'm coming over to the desk, and the TV's up. You're losing to St. Joe's.
Right.
And it's the first round game. It's a tough one. Amida Brima, rebound,
right.
put back, and then free throws coming. Wasn't
right.
the greatest free throw shooter. What's going through your mind?
You know, it's for a guy like Amida, he works so hard that he almost deserved that. He's always in the gym, always working. So for him to be in that position, to finish that play one,
yeah.
and two, to go and knock that free throw down, that was
pressure
incredible. That was incredible, man, and he deserved all the glory for that run. That sparked our run, you know,
yep.
because being that it time
you would have lost
out,
the first round.
That would have been it. That would have been it.
That would have been
but
it.
But he stepped up, made a huge play, just a testament to his hard work. He stayed in the gym. Funny enough, the guy that fouled him on that play ended up being my teammate a couple years later, my first year professionally in Greece.
Really?
So we're
what
in
was
the
his
locker
name?
Room. Oh, man. I can't think of it right now, but
it'll
I'll get
come
back to you.
He fouled him.
He's the one that fouled him. And
I was nervous with Brima going up there. He seems like such a great kid.
Right.
Arguably the biggest free throws in UConn's history.
Yeah, it's up there for sure.
They basically created the momentum to be able to get out of that tough
right.
first round game and win a championship.
Right.
But I can't think of bigger free throws. Maybe Khalid El-Amin against Duke in 1999
mm-hmm.
had some free throws late in the game, but really, really pressure free throws.
Yeah, that was big for him, man. And I'm really happy that he was able to boost the program in that way, because that was a game changer for us. We needed every bit of that play.
I love it. Speaking of bowling, let me give you that.
There you go.
That's a bit of a 10-pin bowling.
There you go.
All right, Joseph, why don't you fire off your next one?
Madison Square Garden is UConn's third home. The NCAA tournament hadn't been at the world's most famous arena in many years. You're facing Michigan State. Describe the energy and bring us into the game with you.
Okay, so after we got done in Albany?
Upstate, right, I believe right? it was,
yeah. So we get done there, and Coach Calhoun comes in, and he's talking to us, and he's like, look, we're going home. We're going to the Garden. That's our home. So just go down there, compete the way you competed, and the rest will take care of itself. Our fans will be there to carry you guys. So that was the beginning of that. And for Coach Calhoun to show up, you know how much respect everyone in the state of Connecticut has for him. The players, fans, everyone. He comes in and he gives you that sense of reassurance, you know, with the coaching from Coach Ali and everybody else. We just felt like we had everything we needed going forward. So that was a big push for us to have everybody backing us, some of the greatest coaches and fans just being there to support us in the Garden. That was an unbelievable feeling. So going into the game, again, everybody just followed Shabazz's lead. That was it. Compete at the highest level. That was pretty much that.
And he was tearing through the tournament. I mean, you had Villanova in there, Iowa State, I believe, then you got Michigan State. Mm-hmm. And then you eventually had to deal with the overall number one seed for the entire year was Florida.
Florida, yep.
So just incredible. Talk a little bit about DeAndre Daniels. Obviously, you've talked about Shabazz, Ryan Boatwright, Niels Giffey. I think a big important transfer was Lasan Chroma.
Mm-hmm.
What made these guys so special as teammates and unstoppable in March?
I think the biggest difference with those guys and other guys that I've come to play with over the years is playing winning basketball, buying into a team concept, and each and every one of those guys did that. From Lasan to Niels, DeAndre, all those guys who were leaders in their roles, they played winning basketball. As far as sacrificing for a teammate, there was no selfishness on that team, you know. Guys can disrupt the chemistry just by being too selfish. And your teammates see this, and it affects everything. It really does. But those guys really played for each other, played for the team.
That's great. I mean, that's rare then, because a lot of teams fall apart.
Right.
And if you look at what Boatwright and Shabazz did to those Florida guards, mm-hmm. who were bigger, maybe even more highly touted,
right.
and then what they eventually did to the Twins for Kentucky,
right.
Those two little guards were just unstoppable.
Yeah, man. They had that chemistry, you know, and they had that bond, brotherhood, you could call it, even in the face of difficulty. Even, I don't know if you remember one incident where Shabazz kind of pushed Ryan.
I do remember that. Yeah, they pushed each other off like they were getting into a fight.
Right, and it was nothing. That was the end of that. It was just, look, we have something really special here and we have to make the most of it. You might be in your emotions at times, but the good thing is we have so much trust in each other that we won't take it personal, you know? Like, I've been a part of teams where if someone, even me, I've been guilty of this. If someone says something to me with a certain tone or anything, you kind of like, why are you saying this? Or
right.
But this is something that I've worked on and I've gotten past just from experience and understanding that's not winning basketball. That's not a winning team chemistry. So for us to be able to shake things off and know that it's not meant to, in malice, in a sense, that kind of fuels everything going forward. Like, okay, maybe I was making a mistake. Maybe he saw something that I didn't see. Let me accept what he's saying and move forward.
That's fantastic. Go ahead, Joseph. Fire another one.
You're a 7th seed playing in the Final Four in front of 80,000 fans. Share your favorite memories of your time in Texas and the dual championships parade in Hartford.
So in Dallas, probably the... aside from hearing... one shining moment playing after we won.
Yes.
The environment was so different in a sense that it's such a huge venue, you know, like a guy will hit a three and then the fans are clapping, but then you won't hear the claps and the cheers until a couple of seconds later because they're so far.
Oh my
it was incredible. it would throw you off a few times because you're like, oh, hit a shot and you're clapping and then you're like done. And then 2 seconds later, you hear a new wave of clap because everyone, it's just such a massive venue, man. That was incredible.
So you'd hear clapping for like 2 minutes straight.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, it's like, all right, what are they clapping for? But you're not thinking it was the play before. But
because it's incredible. Coming down, like
right.
The sound is taking a little while to travel.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a huge football stadium that they just put a little basketball court on.
Exactly. So that was a fun experience for sure.
Do you remember what it was like that Final Four weekend just preparing for the games? Were you in a hotel?
Yeah.
Were you going through workouts? Did you borrow a gym in Texas? Or?
So if I'm remembering correctly, we had a few shoot-arounds at the Cowboys Stadium.
Okay.
To kind of get a feel because, you know, guys are saying it's a different gym. There's no backdrop. You can't have that depth perception,
right,
like you would in a regular size gym.
Right.
So guys were saying that. So we got a chance to shoot around there. But leading up, we stayed in a hotel pretty close to the gym. We had this little area where there were a bunch of games and you could go hang out and the fans got to interact with players and stuff like that. They had concerts and stuff. I'm not sure. Were you there? I'm not sure if you were there.
I didn't go in person.
Right.
And I wasn't able to sleep the night before. So tell me for a second, when you're laying your head down on the pillow the night before you're getting ready to play for a national championship, mm-hmm. you're going to play powerhouse Kentucky, John Calipari. Right. Across the board, he's got all these All-Americans, high school All-Americans,
right.
McDonald's All-Americans. What is Kenton Facey thinking when he's going to bed at night? Are you staying up late, having popcorn, thinking tomorrow's just another day? Or are you thinking, do you have butterflies? What does it feel like?
Well, from my experience will be different from a lot of other guys because for me, I'm just sitting there hoping it's a blowout so I can get in at some point. But overall, it was just all the work we've put in from the preseason throughout the year led up to this moment. So I'm thinking, I just really hope this pays off. I know we've put the work in, so hopefully we go out there and all this is able to show.
Absolutely. Now, you're a freshman on the team,
right.
So you're thinking, I want to be able to get some minutes if
right.
I'm called upon, somebody turns an ankle,
yeah,
somebody gets into foul trouble, I have to be ready. Do you have a particular game plan on how you have to deal with a particular player, or are they just telling you, when you get your minutes, just go all out and try and do what you can?
So we have our scouts and everything, mm-hmm. and a sidetrack. For most of the tournament, I was on the scout team to give different guys different looks. So I was matched up against DeAndre for most of that period, just, you know, trying to do my best to get him ready, challenge him in these practices. So that was a unique experience because it gave me opportunity to really play against a really talented player. Because in regular practices as a freshman, you know, you have an established guy at that position, then you have a backup. Sometimes Niels would play the four or some, so they would probably switch off. So you're not getting as many reps. But it was very useful for me to be in that role and to be able to compete against those guys.
Niels Giffey is one of the greatest three-point shooters in UConn's history. Mm-hmm. I love Rashad Anderson as well. You know, obviously Kemba and Shabazz are fantastic. And now you look at, hopefully drafted tomorrow as a lottery pick,
right.
Mr. Hawkins, right Joe?
Right.
But he was fantastic. And DeAndre Daniels, he took his game up to another level in the NCAA tournament. If he wouldn't have reached the heights that he did, I remember one dunk he had, I think, against Kentucky,
for sure.
Where he went one way and then
baseline
came the other
five,
way. And
yeah,
I
yeah.
just said to myself, uh-oh, he that's not the same kid
right.
I was watching 3 months ago. See, they really, really pulled things together for mm-hmm. it, for this championship to be able to happen, which was just tremendous. Joseph, I know that you have one major question here.
What advice would you give me to be the next UConn superstar?
What advice would I give you to be the next UConn superstar? I think in this moment right now, you're on a very good path because you're very knowledgeable about sports in general, whether it's baseball, basketball. That's a good thing. You're ahead of the game when it comes to other kids, probably your age or even older. You already have that mindset, okay, I understand what it takes. But the one thing I would say is, try to get in the gym every day and work on something. Whenever you get in the gym, you separate yourself from somebody else that's not working as hard as you. So that's the main thing. Try to get in the gym every day, work on something to get better each day. And over time, that'll add up. And regardless of if you keep that up, regardless of how hard anybody else works, you can't close that gap because you're still working and they're way behind you. So try to get better at something every day.
Now, Kenton, we found out, grew up a Lakers fan and is a big Kobe fan. And
right.
if I remember Kobe saying, if I get up at 3 or 4 in the morning and I have a workout before you have breakfast,
right.
And then you multiply that I do that 7 days a week before you have breakfast. And then you multiply that over a month and then take it over a year. Yeah, it's kind of like trying to put a dollar aside every single time for vacation.
Right.
Eventually, somebody who tries to save up late,
like, yep.
even though they try to put in maybe $5 or $10 at a time, they'll never catch you.
Yeah, no. And that'll, I mean, there's so many different ways to look at it. You're doing a little daily deposits is what most guys like to say, right? So you're doing these daily things every day. You develop this habit. Someone who wakes up, okay, I'm going to work out 5 hours today. One, you're putting so much strain on your body. You need time to recover. You need, you know, you got to think of all these things. So every day you're doing something just to get better, just to get better. You pay attention to these details and everything like that. Eventually, there's no catching up without putting so much stress on your body, and then that's going to be a setback.
So you have to do it in increments
well for sure.
to take care of the body.
Right.
How important is eating?
Eating. That is probably the most important thing, if I could list out everything. I think eating, sleep, those two, one and two, 1A and 1B.
Okay.
Sleeping and proper diet, for sure.
Absolutely. And so you look fantastic. You look like you can go out right there. And I'm afraid you'll dunk on me here in the studio.
We don't have a hoop in here. So
thank goodness. Now, after graduation, you played in France. You played in Greece. I want you to talk to us a little bit about what it's like playing in those other countries, sure. favorite food, favorite travel. But before you did any of that, you probably did one of the greatest things anybody could ever do. You met the president of the United States.
Yep.
What was it like going to the White House? And tell me a little bit about how that felt and what the encounter was like.
Right. So it was a great experience. First of all, not everyone gets to share that experience. And for us to go to the White House as a team, it was great. I remember I got a picture with the president and I had posted it on my Facebook at the time, and my community back home, it was just beaming with pride. You know, it's not every day that you see someone from our community, not to say reach those heights, but be in a position where they could meet the president of the United States. It doesn't happen very often. So my entire community back home was super proud, and they reached out and they definitely let me know and feel that love. Everyone was proud just based off of that one picture.
It's tremendous. And it's Barack Obama.
Right.
Everybody, a historic president.
Right. So it was great. And that's probably the most memorable part, was having my family and my community back home show me how proud they are for me to be at that point in my life.
That's incredible. We're so proud of you as fans. So you get to the White House, you're in Washington, D.C. Had you ever been to D.C. before?
No.
Okay, and so now you're going into the president's home. Right. Security guards are everywhere.
Right.
And you get a chance. Did you get a chance to have a few words with him? And you took
a
team picture?
Yeah, yeah. So he came around and spoke to everyone. Okay. Really individually, shake everyone's hand, and you get to
and he's a big basketball fan.
Yeah. He's a good player, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So going there, you go through the security and everything. It's just like, you're not sure what to expect, because you hear about the White House and you're looking like, oh, wow, there's a sniper on the roof over there. It's like, it was great, though. It was great. We went in, got some food, get to hang out, look around a bit. And then the president came in, spoke to us. Then we got on the podium, us and the women's team. And
because you guys went together.
Yes, we did.
I didn't realize that the trip was the two of you together. Did you have a pretty good bond with the women's team? Refresh my memory who some of the players were on that team.
So on that team, we had Mariah.
Okay.
Jefferson, I want to say. Brianna Stewart.
Yep.
I believe.
Okay, because so that she won four titles in 4 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who was Morgan Tuck.
Okay. Stephanie Dolson, maybe?
Steph was on that team.
Oh, that's a fun group.
Yeah. Kia Stokes, I want to say.
That's great. Well, so Joseph was 2 years old when I took him to that parade. We were downtown, dual parade. Joe, we just went to the recent parade for Hurley's first title. It was incredible.
Yeah.
There were thousands and thousands of people.
I could bet.
And we had so much fun. But it really was 1.5, if not 2 times as big when the women and the men won the title. And we're down by the Twin Spires, right in Bushnell Park. And we saw the bus coming by. And then the woman, because unfortunately, UConn has always been a little bit of a divided school. Mm-hmm. You got football fans. They don't pay attention to basketball.
Right.
You got basketball fans. They don't pay attention to the women's basketball. You got women's fans. They don't pay attention to football. But it was like two of the fan groups collided at once, and they shared the braid together. Just incredible.
Yeah, that,
it's only happened twice, and UConn's done it both times.
Right.
Do you remember, I think the girls played the game after you. Do you remember saying, oh my gosh, my school is going to win both of them?
Yeah, that was incredible. That was, because our team and the women's team, we had a pretty close bond, you know. We would see each other. Some guys would go out to eat. I know Phil had a great relationship with most of the women's players. So from being around Phil and hanging out with him, we hung out with
Phil Nolan. He was another great one in that team.
Yeah, he was great, man. Phil was great. That was probably one of my favorite teammates.
That's great.
Because even on my visit, I was with him for majority of the visit, him and Omar. But yeah, that was great. We hung out with them a bunch. For the parade, that was awesome. Just being able to be together and feel the support from everyone around us. Even coming back to campus, getting off the plane, we had the governor meet us there, and we had like the fire truck doing the salute or whatever they were doing.
And they're hanging flags and stuff like that.
That was an incredible experience.
I mean, just the campus itself is partying for two days in a row. Joseph, put your headphones, block your headphones, but with all this partying going on. But it's two nights in a row, the men, women, back to back. Can you believe it? I mean, people in their dorms must have just been wiling out.
So
you heard some of the pictures and scenes from this year.
Right.
You got some kids that got into trouble. I don't know why they beat up their own community with
that doesn't make sense.
Couches and lampposts and everything else, but just bottled up excitement that has nowhere to go.
So we're away after we win, and we're almost rushing to get back to campus because we're on social media. We're seeing everything that's going on like, oh, wow, we're still over here, but on campus, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But we get back finally, and the welcome was great. And then you walk around like superstars for a couple weeks.
I know. You must be going to school, and you're thinking to yourself, I'm the big man on campus.
Man, it was a great experience for sure. Most of our classmates were, you going to class, they would clap and give you a hug and good job, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was a great feeling.
Amita's walking around saying, thank God I made those free throws.
Man, everybody is saying, thank God Amita made those free throws or that free throw.
So tell us a little bit about after you leave UConn, you're going to play, was it Greece, then France?
Yeah, my first year was in Greece. And then after that, as far as a full year, I did half a year in Greece, and then I did a couple months in Qatar.
Okay. Now, Joseph, you know a major basketball player, which we have interviewed his biographer, who's from Greece. Do you care to share who that major player is? I think you might actually be wearing his sneakers right now.
Giannis.
Giannis, right? And so he's a legend over there. But Greece, I heard, is a pretty fun landing spot if you're going to be going to play overseas.
Yeah, for sure.
So how long did it take you to get used to the team, the rules, the food, the culture, et cetera? You're in a different country now.
It was different. It took some getting used to because, you know, coming out of college, still in a sense a kid, you're going over there and now you're playing against a grown man with wife and kids at the game.
Oh, my gosh. And you're a pro now. You're getting paid.
Exactly. So you have to be ready for that aspect of it. To me, the first game I played, I'm on the court. I'm playing against a bigger guy, stronger, more physical. And I'm playing. He's pushing me around. I'm like, all right. It was just a physical game. And after the game, he hops in a minivan with his wife and like four kids behind him. And I'm standing there looking like, wow, this is real life. This is grown people business. You have to be ready to go take something from someone.
I know.
To take care of yourself. Because he's trying to do the same. He has a family to feed. But
exactly.
That was a wake-up call for me for sure.
Exactly. He's like, hey, Rook.
Yeah.
You're not going to show me up.
Exactly.
I got mouths to feed.
Right.
That's, and you're thinking, hey, you know, you're an old-timer. I'm going to run circles around
exactly.
you. But really in strength, in experience, and sometimes hunger.
Right.
Some of these guys, it's a possible world of difference. How did you end up doing in your first year as a pro?
It was a solid year, my first year. It wasn't anything crazy, but it was enough for me to secure jobs after that point, but also experience what playing at a really high level professionally overseas is like. So I took that and learned from it and got better as the years went on.
Now, we spoke with Kevin Freeman, if you remember, Joe. Mm-hmm. And do you remember what happened on the air during the Kevin Freeman podcast?
I lost my tooth.
Oh, really?
He lost his tooth on the air in the middle of the Kevin Freeman podcast. And he was saying that in some of the countries that he's played at, the fans are insane. Flares are going off in the stands. Something about heating up quarters or I don't, I mean, it just, it sounds like you'll get thrown out of the XL Center really quick if that happens. Sure. But would you consider the fans in Greece and France, were they similar to the level of like soccer craziness?
Yes,
or?
100%. So going back to that first game I played in Greece, we get there and our coach comes into the locker room and he's talking to the, because we had five rookies on that team.
Oh, wow. You playing with anybody from the States?
Yeah, so I played with one guy that went to Pepperdine named Lamond Murray Jr.
Okay.
His dad played in the NBA for a few years.
Okay.
Another guy, Sean Dre. Another guy, Shannon Hale.
The guy who followed Amita.
Yes, but he was later on. Okay. Though. He was later on than myself and another rookie. So we're in the locker room and the coach comes in and he's like, guys, I know you went to school in the U.S., but this is not, the fans are not the same. It's way worse. And I'm thinking like, No, there's no way. We go out there.
And you also must have been thinking, and I'm also a national champion. You want to see my ring?
I'm thinking, there's no way he's telling me these fans are crazier than what I've experienced in the past.
Okay.
I promise you. I went out to get on the court, and the drums, it felt like they were on top of you. Some of them were throwing stuff. You could smell like drugs in the air.
Oh, my.
Like, it was nuts. Like,
they and are, so do they not have security? Or it's just more wide open.
it's just more wide open.
But the thing is, you're used to soccer, the soccer culture.
Right, right, right.
When you got that drumming and everything like that. So it's almost more soccerish than it is basketball.
Yeah, it's just sometimes you have the game and there will be riot police lining the stands.
Unbelievable.
It gets nuts, man, especially a rivalry game. Flares, like Coach Freeman says, flares going off. And
but flares are for outdoors.
Yeah, you would think.
They're inside the arena, a flare. Like somebody would signal Joseph a boat if you were in distress.
Yeah.
Can you imagine one of those going across your head at Gamble when you're like, Dad, I need a hot dog. I need a popcorn. Oh, my gosh.
There's no chance.
So Greece, were you in a beautiful part of Greece where you see all the beautiful?
I was in more of a smaller village almost.
Okay.
But traveling and everything like that, it was beautiful. It was nice.
That's awesome. And then after that, was it a stay in France?
I
mean, these are two prime time there. Countries. I've never been
France,
to either one.
You should.
I'd love to go to both.
Especially France. You should go see in Athens, the Acropolis and all that stuff. It's beautiful.
So you got to travel.
Experience.
Basketball has let you see the world.
Right.
And how was the French competition? Like, obviously, the food is good.
Food is amazing. Wine is even better. But the competition in France is top notch. It's very high level basketball over there.
Now, there's going to be a French player tomorrow, I believe, that'll probably, because we're recording this the night before the NBA draft, which UConn's hoping to have three players get drafted. Do you want to tell those three players, Joe?
Andre Jackson, Jordan Hawkins, and Adama Sanogo.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I think that any team that gets those three players will be very lucky to have any of the three. We have probably the best shooter in the draft, one of the hardest workers, an immovable big man who's a fantastic defender, and then Andre Jackson, just a
do-everything
passer, lightning bolt, athletic dunker. They definitely are going to make for an exciting night. Now, we'll probably hopefully drop the podcast either tomorrow or the day after, but that's exciting. And I think that, the future is bright for UConn, and the opportunity to have these people be, you know, part of our family of fans is an exciting thing. Joseph, what are your thoughts in regards to, we have one of your friends, is it, which friend?
Kaysen.
Kaysen Butler. We asked on Facebook, would anybody like to ask a question to Kenton? And this is one of the point guards on Joseph's travel team. And he said, Kenton, who was the greatest teammate that you ever played with? College or professionally?
I'm between three players, probably.
Okay.
But I'm probably going to lean towards Amita because we're still closer than I am to Shabazz or Jalen. Those are the other two guys. So I would say Amita, Shabazz, or Jalen, but I'd probably give the nod to Amita for
and
sure.
And you guys still keep in contact with each other. So Amita Brima, every day. You should have brought him to the studio.
He's in Florida right now. Okay. He has a lot going on. He's, this is out there. He's expecting a baby.
Okay, but well, you had to double check. I didn't know if we were breaking any news here on the Sliders and Curveballs podcast.
He already put that on his Instagram and everything.
Baby news and sports news. Yeah. Okay, so that's good. Congratulations, Amita.
Yeah, for sure.
That's fantastic. And he's down in Florida.
Right.
And that's exciting. So you guys have had a really great relationship continuing after school.
Right, yep. Now, he was actually in France this past year.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I went to a couple of his games. He was on a different team, but I went to a few of his games.
Fantastic. Yep. Now, I just want to end with, we bump into you at the mall. Right. Obviously, I didn't tackle you or anything. No, I couldn't pass up the opportunity, though, to invite you back into the studio. Joseph just bought what sneakers did you buy yesterday?
The brand new Jason Tatum Lemonades.
Nice. Pink Lemonades. So he's a bit of a sneakerhead. You got sneakers that day. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, we're going to get you on over into the studio. Tell us a little bit about what have you done since college with, you know, outside of France and Greece.
Gotcha.
I know that you said that you're married now. Mm-hmm. You have some stuff going on in the world as far as being a founding member.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that so the fans can keep up on what Kenton's doing.
So for me, as you said, I'm married now. Trying to do life, you know, with my partner now, my wife, Bianca. Shout out to her for keeping me sane throughout this whole college experience and a professional career. She's been there to motivate, support me, and everything like that, so I'm grateful for her. Outside of that, I am a part of a project that was founded in France, actually, with myself and some of my teammates and close friends. It's called Courtside Club, and it's a VIP club that we are a bunch of basketball fans, and we come together with resources, and we operate a professional basketball team. So we are right now, we're still in the early stages of building and expanding our reach and everything like this, but the end goal is that we will own a team together as a community, and we make decisions together as that community, you know, different things, jerseys that we wear, players that we recruit, stuff like that. So it's a very unique program or project.
Cow.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
And where can we find more information on that?
So our Twitter handle, I think we retweeted.
Come listen to the podcast when it drops.
So it's at Courtside Club _IO.
Okay.
So you could check that out. You could even check my Instagram or Twitter page, and you could find the handle there. You guys could just follow along, you know. Give us a like or a retweet, anything like that. It helps us get more exposure. But it's a very unique project, and we think this is the beginning of something really special. And over time, we hope to build a Web3 agency that allows fans to interact with professional athletes in a more personable way. You know, because now you go to a game, you might buy a jersey, or if you pay enough, you might sit courtside and you might see a player or so afterwards. But our project will enable our fans to really interact and help make decisions that affects a team.
Incredible. Yeah. Now, the team eventually will take the court. Will it be playing in France?
So we're looking at a few different markets.
Okay.
We're looking at a few different markets, different countries, whatever country would provide us the most benefits.
Okay. And it's going to be like a club team, almost soccer-ish?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So you'll play in a league or?
Right. We'll be in the league. Okay. How it works is you get a license for a league.
Okay.
You enter that league, and from depending on where you start off, you could be in, let's say, a third division.
Okay.
You win, you move up to a second division, you get promoted. And so on and so forth. So you could win, move up, lose, and move down, get relegated.
So the
whole process of that is just put a really good team together, compete, follow the storyline, and move up and advance as a team.
Wow. Well, if they would have done relegation in the Big East, DePaul would have been gone years ago, right?
Goal!
There you go.
Now, here's the thing. Joseph, at one point in time, said he wants to own a basketball team. Mm-hmm. So am I connecting the stars and the dots right here at the table?
Hey, you might very well be.
Do you have any 11-year-olds that are part owners of this team yet?
No, not yet. It's the first time for everything.
All right, so Joseph, you've already given him your business card, your baseball card,
there
right?
There you go.
You potentially could be an owner of a team in France. How would you feel about that, Joe?
anything that I get paid the big bucks
on. You're in for it. Well, Kaysen, your buddy, he just won a great Topps baseball card because a lot of our show is rooted in baseball. So he asked that great question for Kenton, who one of his favorite teammates were. Amita Brima is the favorite. And so he's going to get a great card. You might end up being a part owner of a basketball team by the time this is over. So that's very exciting. Courtside Club. And you were working out almost every day. We had to book you at the end of a workout.
Yeah, so today was actually worked out well because I had an accident last night. I ended up in the emergency room.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was a small cut, but I got a couple stitches. And then today I was told I had to kind of take the day off. So Harry and myself, we just were at St. Joe's. We lifted and then came over.
It worked out perfect because you knew you were coming on the air today.
Yeah.
So you cut yourself last night.
Exactly. It was planned.
Harry, who's over here listening in on the podcast, you want to say hello, Harry? I don't know hopefully your mic is on.
Hi, guys.
So Harry came over, and actually I gave him bad directions, too. I sent him to a little bit of a different part of town, but they made it. And so that's exciting, but I'm glad you're okay.
Hey,
and you knew that you're going to be taking the day off, but you're going to be in the 11-year-old's playground. What do you think of the studio?
This is a great setup. Nice, real nice.
Well, we want to thank Kenton Facey, 2014 national champion, so much. We loved rooting for you. We love that you're doing well. The Courtside Project sounds fantastic. Joseph, I love you. Thank you for being on the show with me.
Love you.
And Kenton, we can't wait to continue to reach out to you. We'll have to go see a game sometime.
Sounds good.
The three of us, because I want to be an owner too. So it's like three owners going to the XL Center maybe.
Sounds good.
And we can watch these young guys, Donovan Klingon, Caravan, who's been on our podcast.
I have his jersey.
Nice.
We walk in there as owners, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
And we say, where's the seats? Hey, Hurley, what do you got for us? Put on a show.
Yeah. You know, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you.
Appreciate the support over the years. And for anyone listening, UConn fan or not, I implore you guys to just show some support to our guys. It's very tough what they have to do. You know, it's a lot of hard work throughout the summer, throughout the season. We appreciate the support, and we need you guys going forward.
UConn Nation, one love. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening to the Sliders and Curveballs podcast. We wish you a wonderful summer. I hope everybody had just a great Father's Day. My favorite thing in the world is to be in the studio with my son, talking to all the people that he follows. And we couldn't be more pleased that we had a chance to speak with Kenton today.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Peace.